Chapter 13. They were all sitting at their second lookout, watching for the bandits to come out of the loop to make sure that they were on their way up.
How many did you say you counted, Curdy?
Asked Howard.
15 or 16?
Howard addressed Lacod.
According to what you told us, there could not be that many left in this part of the mountains.
Well, certainly not. But they may have been joined by another stray group not yet captured.
It looks like it,
Howard said.
Well, there are hard times coming for us. The peasants down in the village, to get rid of them as quickly as possible, have told them that up here there's a hunter who has guns and plenty of ammunition. That's what they want, because they may need them badly. We better start thinking of our defense.
Howard directed the plans, while Curtin, having the best eyes, was to stay at the lookout to make sure that the bandits really were coming. The burros were brought in from the pasture and taken into a thicket in a ravine nearby, where they were tied to prevent them from running away. Right at the base of the naked rock that formed a sort of wall for the camp, there was, almost the whole length of this rock, a narrow and not very deep ravine, which appeared to have been washed out by the rain. This ravine was like a natural trench. Howard was quick to choose this as the main bulwark in his tactics. This trench could hardly be attacked from the back, because the rock was rather high, and its form was not straight, but rounded. Anybody on the top could not shoot anybody in the trench. Only with the help of long ropes would it have been possible for a man to come down from the top to the trench, and in a fight, he would never set foot in the trench alive. The trench could not be flanked either, as rocks also prevented this. On one side, the rocks had to be climbed, almost from the valley up, and it had to be done just at this slope, which could be scaled only by experienced alpinists with perfect equipment. The other side was partly walled in by rocks, and the only opening could easily be covered by the gun of one man in the trench, whose duty would be to watch this opening. The bandits had no choice but to pass the whole camp if they wished to attack the trench. Camp offered no ambush, and the defenders in the trench had only to take aim to finish any bandit who came in sight. The buckets were filled with water and brought into the trench. The tent and all the belongings of the partners, including provisions, were also taken into this fortress.
We have to keep them away from the mine,
said Howard. From the mine? Lacod asked. I haven't seen a mine yet. Now you know it, you jackass. Dobbs sneered. The cat is out of the bag. Did you think we were up here to tell one another bedtime stories, you mug?
We can keep them away best by holding them here,
Howard explained.
We'll make them believe that this is the only camp we have. Besides, they won't come across the mine anyway, even should they try to corner us from that side. The mine is not in their way. Whatever they do to try and lure us out of our hole...
They couldn't do anything with the mine anyhow, even if they found it. Dobbs was gathering the ammunition out of the bags.
No,
said Howard.
You're right. They could do nothing with it. I mean, they could steal nothing, but, and this would be just too bad, they could destroy everything there. Still, come to think of it, it wouldn't matter so much. That would save us the labor of breaking it down ourselves when we leave.
What about a retreat? Lacod suggested. It might be a better strategy not to fight at all. Just to hide out. Let them leave with long faces.
I thought of that also,
Howard answered.
In the first place, there's no other road out of here but the one in which we'd have to meet them. If it comes to a fight, we're better off here than on the road or anywhere else. Of course, we can hide somewhere near. We might even try to go across the rocks, but we might break our necks in doing that. What's worse, we could take nothing along with us. We'd lose the burros and our whole outfit. The outfit we could bury or hide somehow. But do you think they'd leave us alone? They would be after us whatever trail we took. In finding trails in the Sierra, we can't beat these men. At that, they are experts and we bad amateurs. Better not think of that anymore.
You're right, old man. As usual. Dobbs patted him on the back. At this moment, Curtin called from his lookout.
They're at the loop now, and turning into the trail up here.
He jumped down and came to the others, who were completing the last things to be done.
You know the trail best, Curdy,
Howard said.
How long do you think it'll take them to get up here? With their tired horses, it'll take them 2 hours at least. Of course, they may be lazy and take a rest, or have difficulty making out the trail and the shortest route, so it may be as much as 4 hours? All right.
Howard jumped into the trench.
Let's say for sure 2 hours. 2 hours in our favor. Let's make the best of it. Have our eats now so we waste no time when the dance starts.
They sat down, built a fire, and cooked their meal. All this was done inside the trench. Curtin did the cooking, while the others were busy building stations and getting all the guns and ammunition at hand.
If nobody objects, I'll take command. Right by you, partners?
Howard asked.
No objection,
was the answer.
I'll take the left center. You, LeCord, take the right center. Dobbs, you take your station at the left corner, and Curtin, you take the right corner. This corner you're to hold, Curdy, is important, for here is where, through that crack in the rocks, a guy may sneak in. So you watch that side well, and LeCord may also have a look at that flank.
When the meal was ready, they sat down and had their final war council while eating. The partners were still strengthening their stations with piled-up earth so that they could hide their heads while shooting when the first bandits appeared on the glade. Howard hissed to get the boys' attention. A hiss was a very good signal, invented by the old man, as it was not different from the natural sounds of the vicinity and so was noticed only by those who were meant to hear it. 3 men were standing in the narrow opening of the bush. One of them was the man with a huge gilded palm hat. They stood for a while, rather bewildered, seeing the place bare, and no sign of a human being near. They called back to the other men, coming into the clearing. It seemed they had left their horses on a little plateau, located some 150 feet below on the road, where there was a bit of thin pasturage. Since this last part of the trail was the hardest to make with animals, they had left the horses farther down, and so reached the camp earlier than the boys had figured they would. 2 minutes later, all men, save 2 who guarded the horses, were on the campsite. What they said the boys in the trench could not hear. The distance was too great. All the men carried guns on their hips, guns of different types and calibers. 4 men carried shotguns, and 2 had rifles. All were in rags and had not washed or shaved for weeks. For months, they had no haircuts. Most of them wore the usual sandals. A few had boots, but ripped open and with torn soles. Some had on leather pants like those worn by cowboys or cattle farmers. All carried cheap woolen blankets over their shoulders. 2 men ventured farther into the campsite. They noted that a tent had been pitched and a fire built not long before. Then they looked around and, on seeing no other sign, returned to the other men, now squatting on the ground near the opening. From the spot where they were sitting, it was hard to tell that there was a ravine at the opposite part of the camp. They were smoking and talking. The boys in the trench could see from the gestures of the men that they did not know what to make of all this or what to do. A few were heard quarreling because they had made so hard a trip without the slightest gain. Some rose and began again to walk about the place to see if there was any trace of the hunter supposed to be there. When they returned to the main group, it seemed as if they had decided to leave the camp, go down the valley, and look there for further adventures. There was a long discussion about several points. A few men went to the middle of the camp and sat down there. Now they had to talk louder so that all the men, spread over a wider space, could understand what was said and give their opinions. The leaders seemed to have little authority, nor was there any sort of discipline among them. Each had his own opinion, and each thought his own advice should be followed by the others. One proposed that they use this site for headquarters, from which to raid the villages in the valley. That would be the goddamn worst thing they could do, said Dobbs to Howard in a hushed voice.
You bet it would, but be quiet so that we can listen in better. I wonder,
said Curtin to LeCord,
if it wouldn't be best to bump them all off right now. None could escape alive. Give the word to the old man and ask him what he thinks.
The word came back from Howard that he meant to wait. They might change their plans yet and go.
Just look at these guys nearest here.
Curtin spoke to LeCord.
A fine bunch they are. They have hanging around their necks medals and pictures of the saints and Virgin to protect them from the devil. That's something, oh boy.
I told you the paper said that the passengers had observed that all these murderers were pious Catholics.
Here, the church has done a great thing,
Curtin said.
Our Methodists can't beat that. But man, look, what are they about now?
2 men began to build a fire right where the partners used to have theirs, where there were still a few half-burned sticks lying about.
There's no doubt that they mean to stay here at least for one night.
Howard said to Dobbs, Well, it won't be long now before we'll have a real movie here. They've got plenty of ammunition. The cod pointed to some of the men who had three cartridge belts slung about their chests, most of them well-filled. Having built the fire, one of the men went exploring for fuel or for water or for a rabbit hole or for wild green pepper. He went straight across the camp and right up to the trench. He did not look at the base of the rock, but glanced up the rock, thinking perhaps he might find a trace of the gringo. Perhaps there might be a cave in which he lived. Not seeing anything, he was about to return to the fire when he looked down to the bottom of the rock, where he saw the head of Curtin. Nothing else. He seemed not quite sure whether he had seen right, so he stepped one pace closer.
Ay, caramba, chingi tu madre,
he said in a surprised voice. Then he turned round to his gang and shouted,
Venga acá! Come here, all you muchachos! Here you will see a great sight! Hurry! Our little birdie is sitting in his eggs, waiting to hatch! Whoever would have thought them goddamn gringos and cabrones would use a skunk hole for their headquarters!
All the men rose and came hurrying toward him. When they were halfway across the camp, Curtin shouted,
Stop or I shoot!
The bandits immediately stopped, and the man who had discovered Curtin and was only 5 feet away from the trench, raised his arm and said,
all right, bueno, muy bueno. Don't get sore at me. Ya me ve. I am on my way.
Saying this, he retreated, walking backwards. He made no attempt to reach for his gun. The bandits had been so taken by surprise that for a while they could not speak. They returned slowly to the opening where the trail ran into the thicket. Here they began to talk rather rapidly. None of the boys in the trench could understand a word of what they were saying. A few moments later, the leader, the one with the golden hat, stepped forward, right in the middle of the camp. He put his thumbs close together in front of his belt, wishing by doing so to indicate that he did not mean to shoot as long as the other did not draw.
Oiga, senor, listen, we are no bandits. You are mistaken. We are the Polizei Montada, the mounted police, you know. We are looking for the bandits. To catch them, they have robbed the train, you know.
All right,
Curtin shouted back.
If you're the police, where are your badges? Let's see them.
Badges? The goddamn hell with badges. We have no badges. In fact, we don't need badges. I don't have to show you any stinking badges, you goddamned cabron and ching tu madre. Come out there from that shithole of yours. I have to speak to you.
I have nothing to say to you. If you want to speak to me, you can do so just as well from where you are. You better not come any closer if you want to keep your health.
We shall arrest you, by order of the governor. You are hunting here without a hunter's license, nor have you any for carrying guns. We have orders to confiscate your guns and your ammunition.
Where is your badge?
Curtin asked.
Let's see it, and I might be willing to talk things over with you.
Be reasonable, Tengarazón. We are not going to arrest you. Just hand over your gun with the cartuchos, the ammunition, you know. Your shotgun you may keep for yourself. That's the sort of guys we are.
He came 2 steps nearer the trench. 4 or 5 of the others started to follow their leader.
Another step,
Curtin yelled.
And I shoot, so help me.
No si malo, hombre. Why, we don't want to do you any harm. No harm at all. Why can't you just be a little more polite? Or at least more sociable. We mean well. Give us your gun and we'll leave you in peace. Sure we will.
He made no attempt to come nearer.
I need a gun myself and I won't part with it.
Throw that old iron over here. And we'll pick it up and go on our way.
Nothing doing. You better go without my gun and go quick. I might easily lose my good temper listening to your babble.
Curtin waved his gun over the rim of the trench. The man retreated a few steps and again held counsel with his followers. They had to admit that Curtin held the strongest position. It would have cost the life of at least 3 of them had they tried to overpower him by direct attack. None of them wanted to be the victim. The price for that gun was too high. The bandits squatted around the fire and cooked their meager meal, consisting of tortillas, black beans, green peppers, dried meat, and tea brewed from lemon leaves. They were fully convinced that the gringo and his gun would be in their hands soon enough. It was only a matter of a few hours. He could not escape. He would have to sleep sometime. While eating, they did not talk very much. Later, however, after they had had their siesta, they were looking for some entertainment. So they began to think about the gringo, to get him alive by any means and then make him the object of their enjoyment. They would begin by putting little pieces of embers in his mouth and watching him make funny faces. After this, there were more refined ways by which to obtain pleasure during the next 24 hours. The victim usually does not like them. He may die too soon. So every kind of precaution has to be taken to make the entertainment last as long as possible. These men are never at a loss about what to do and how to do it. They are well trained in their churches from childhood on. Their churches are filled with paintings and statues representing every possible torture white men, Christians, inquisitors, and bishops could think of. These are the proper paintings and statues for churches in a country in which the most powerful church on earth wanted to demonstrate how deep in subjection all human beings can be kept for centuries, if there exists no other aim but the enlargement of the splendor and the riches of the rulers. What meaning has the human soul to that branch of this great church? No follower of this same church in civilized countries ever seems to question the true origin of its grandeur, or the way in which the riches of the church were obtained. So it is not the bandits who were to blame. They were doing and thinking only what they had been taught. Instead of being shown the beauty of this religion, they had been shown only the cruelest and the bloodiest and the most repulsive parts of it. These abhorrent parts of the religion were presented as the most important, so as to make it feared and respected, not through faith or love, but through sheer terror and the most abominable superstitions. This is why these men were wearing upon their breasts a picture of the Virgin of St. Joseph, and why they go to church and pray an hour before the statue of San Antonio whenever they are on their way to commit a wholesale murder, or a train assault, or a highway holdup. Praying to the statues before and after the deed and begging the saint to protect them in their crime against the shots the victim may fire at them, and to protect them afterwards against the authorities. There was now no urgent occupation for the bandits. They planned to catch the gringo and begin the fun. Curtin and the other partners had understood what the bandits had been discussing and knew that a fresh attack was to be made. No doubt of that. One man stood up. He pushed his gun under his ragged short leather coat so that the gringo in the trench should not see that it was ready to be fired. But Curtin, knowing gangster tricks, had seen this move. The man came closer. All the others rose also and walked slowly to the middle of the camp.
"Listen, you."
The leader with the gilded hat addressed Curtin.
"Listen, we'd better come now to a quick understanding. We want to go because our provisions have given out, and we want to be at the market early tomorrow morning. Let me have your gun and the ammunition. I don't wish to have it for nothing. I want to buy it. Here, I have a genuine gold watch with genuine gold chain, made in your own country. That watch with the chain is worth at least 200 pesos. I'll exchange this watch for your gun. Good business it is for you. You'd better take it."
He produced the watch and swung it on its chain around his head. Curtin answered,
"You keep your watch and I'll keep my gun. Whether you go to market or not doesn't matter to me, but you won't get my gun, of that I'm sure."
"Oh, are you? Won't we get it? You mongrel! You dirty cabron! I'll show you!"
This was spoken by the man nearest the trench. He pointed his gun, still hidden under his coat, at Curtin. A shot was heard, and the man threw up his hand in which he held the gun and shouted,
"Holy Mary, Mother of the Lord, esto herido, I am hit!"
The bandits looked in the direction from which the shot had come. It was not Curtin who had fired. It had come from the opposite corner of the trench, where a faint cloud of blue smoke was still to be seen. The bandits were so surprised that they found no words to express their amazement. Going backwards, they returned to the bushes. Here they squatted and went on talking. They seemed very much confused. The information obtained in the village must have been incorrect. They had expected to meet here only one occupant of the camp. Now they became suspicious that the police might be here, or soldiers. But on the other hand, soldiers would not have a gringo with them. And again, the gringo might have been kept here by the soldiers just to fool the bandits into attacking. One of the guards by the horses had heard the shot and came up to the camp to ask what had happened. After being informed, he left for his post again. He was told to keep the horses ready for any emergency. When the discussions had been on for half an hour, the bandits suddenly laughed and rose. They went once more to the center of the camp.
"Hey, senor, You there, you cannot play such tricks on us. We are too smart for that. We know that you had your rifle over in this corner, and that by the help of a long string you pulled the trigger from where you are. We know these tricks. We do the same when hunting ducks on the lakes. Don't try this on us.
With a rapid move, all the men had their guns up, aiming at Curtin.
Now come out of your dirty hole. No stalling any longer. Come, come. Vaminos. Or by the most holy virgin, we'll drag you out like a rabbit.
Nothing doing. No bingo, cabrones. Another pace, and you're done for. Keep your distance and go further back. I don't like you so close. Andale, and pronto.
All right, as you wish. Now we have to use force. We shall tear open your mouth to your ears, just for the goddamn cabrones you called us. Stinking gringo, bred by funking dogs, that's what you are.
All the men dropped on the ground, and, guns in hand, started crawling toward the trench, taking care not to expose their bodies to the gringo, who seemed to be a very good shot. Hardly had they advanced 6 feet when 4 shots rang out, each one coming from a different gun. 2 of the bandits shouted that they had been wounded. All of the men turned round and, without getting up on their feet, crawled back to the bushes. They no longer doubted that the trench was occupied by soldiers, perhaps by only a few, but soldiers they must be. Probably a bigger troop was already on the way to attack them from the rear. One man was sent down to the guards by the horses to ask if they had seen soldiers marching in the valley. The guards said there were none, or they would surely have seen them. When this message reached the men, they felt better. After a long discussion, they decided to take the trench at once. If the men in the trench were soldiers, they would get rid of them, and so have only one front to fight against. It was more important, and actually the decisive factor indeed, that in winning the trench, they would come into possession of more guns, ammunition, provisions, and clothing than they had ever thought was in store here. For these riches, they were willing to sacrifice one of their own men, because such a sacrifice would pay well. All agreed upon this decision. The partners in the trench felt that they had won a breathing space. Since the bandits had not been scared away, but were discussing a new plan, the defenders knew they would be attacked again.
If we could only guess what they're going to do next,
Curtin said.
It would help us little to know,
Howard said.
We can only act according to their plans, for they show us their plans by every move they make. All we have to do is to keep awake. I think they're coming very early in the morning, hoping to find us asleep. Seldom do these mestizos and Indians fight at night, if they can help it.
I suggest that we get up and attack and not wait for them, advised Dobbs. Lacaud said, I don't think that would be clever. As it is, they don't know how many of us there are. They may think there are 10 of us. That is greatly to our advantage. If we all step out, they will know our number. I suppose we are pretty safe here in this trench. They have no idea how many of us there are, how many guns we have, or whether we might go round and attack in their rear.
The question is,
said Curtin,
how long can we resist before we have to surrender? If we live very economically, we can stay here for 2 weeks. The only thing that might prevent that is the lack of water. Of course, in the morning, there's always dew. A bit is running down the rock right into our kettles. We might also have rain very soon.
Howard seemed to have thought everything over carefully. The burros were braying in their little corral. The bandits heard them, but took no particular notice. They had no need for burros, and besides, they seemed rather far away. Perhaps they were burros belonging to the villagers. To get to the animals, the bandits would first have to be in full possession of the trench. It would have made a deeper impression upon them if the neighing had come from horses. This would have been evidence that soldiers were in the trench, and the bandits might have been induced to leave rather than take up battle.
Had we prayed to the Lord for a little bit of help,
Howard said,
certain things couldn't have gone better. We have a full moon, moonlight practically the whole night. By this excellent light, we can see the whole camp before us, whereas these rascals can see nothing of us. Against the dark rock behind us, they can't even see our heads rising above the rim. Right, old man,
Curtin admitted.
We're certainly not so bad off as it seemed a few hours ago. For the night, we shouldn't keep the stations we kept during the day,
Howard explained.
We stay in 2 groups. Dobbs and I take the left section, and you, Curdy and Lakey, you take the right section. As long as there's no move in sight, one may have a nap and the other watch. As soon as things start, you just kick the sleeping guy in the ribs and he'll be up. Better still, two of us lie down right now. I'm positive there'll be no move on the other side for the next 6 hours. It'll be different around 3 in the morning. All right, Dobbs and Lacord, dismissed. You two take your sweet slumber now.
It was 4:30 in the morning when Dobbs kicked Howard and Lacord kicked Curtin in the buttocks.
I think they are coming,
Dobbs said to Howard in a hushed voice.
I've seen them moving.
Both Howard and Curtin were up like partridges, surprised by a fox. The campsite was flooded with moonlight, so that even a cat could not have crossed it without being seen. Howard walked quickly to the right section to make sure that Curtin and Lacord were awake and at their posts. He gave orders to fire the very moment 4 men should reach the middle of the camp, and to take careful aim, if possible, to kill.
There is no longer any way out. It's us or them,
he said.
They know no mercy.
The bandits seemed to be sure that the besieged were asleep, so they were not too careful when making their attack. On reaching the center, 4 shots whipped simultaneously across the camp, and 2 men cursed and shouted for their saints because they had caught bullets. Somehow, they seemed not to mind. They could not only send out bullets, but also take them like real bandits. Gangsters, they were not. Most likely, they still thought that Curtin had played a trick on them in some way or other. They felt sure that only 1 shot could be expected when storming the trench. All lay down on the ground and crawled further on toward Curtin. The last third of their way they meant to run, and so make it impossible for Curtin to shoot more than once or twice. A few appeared not to be patient enough to go slow, for the one who had the gringo by the collar first would have his choice of the guns of the victim. They jumped up and began to run out of line. Hardly had they risen when again 4 shots were fired, and 3 men seemed to have been hit. None was dead, however, so far as the partners could see. They still seemed to be in possession of all their faculties. Anyway, the lesson they had received made them more careful. That 4 shots had been fired twice, and that all had been well aimed, upset their plans. None knew what to think of the situation. There might be 2 dozen soldiers in this trench, yet when they arrived once more at the bushes and discussed new plans, they came to the conclusion that if there really were 2 dozen men hidden in the trench, they would have attacked them from ambush just before the bandits entered the camp, where they would have had no chance to defend themselves. Morning came in a hurry. The bandits now settled down to cook their breakfast. The hurt were doctoring their wounds in a way that would have thrown a hospital intern into a coma. They spat into their wounds, rubbed dirt and chewed leaves plucked from the bushes into them to stop bleeding, and bandaged them with strips of their filthy shirts. In the trench, the partners also had their breakfast. It is a strict rule of Mexican bandits and of Mexican soldiers fighting bandits or revolutionaries that no attack be made by either side while they have their meals. To do so would be considered as tactless as shooting at trucks bearing the Red Cross sign, or at men waving a white flag among civilized nations at war.
Now don't you boys make any mistake,
Howard warned them when Curtin mentioned that they might be left alone from now on.
You don't know them, if you think that. They'll come again, likely late in the afternoon. They need our guns and our ammunition more than they need bread. The more we shoot, the better they know that there's a sort of armory worth fighting for. If I judge these killers right, they're not going to repeat the attack the same way. They'll look for a new way to get us. Every shot we fire is a shot lost to them. They don't want us to waste the ammunition which they feel is theirs already. I mean to say, they're going to prevent us from shooting some way or other.
I'd like to know how they think they can get us without making us fire at them, Lacord said.
Let's wait and see. Don't forget, all these men have been soldiers during the last revolutions, or if not soldiers, then fighters against the regulars. They're trained to have all sorts of experience. I'll get a rest now.
The old man made himself comfortable on the ground. So did Lacord. Curtin and Dobbs were watching the camp leisurely. The bandits had gone down the trail, except 2 who were left to keep watch. They got drowsy after 30 minutes and fell asleep. About the middle of the forenoon, Curtin called Dobbs.
Do you see what I see?
Those goddamn devils. If we could only send them all to hell.
Dobbs answered as he roused Howard and Lacord.
What is it?
Howard asked.
Coming again?
Just have a look at a fine performance.
You don't have to go to the movies this afternoon to learn new tricks. Dobbs whistled through his teeth out of excitement. Howard watched the bandits for half a minute.
I reckon they're gonna trap us now. We have to think awfully fast to meet their old Indian trick. Doggone it to hell, I've got to get an idea what to do now, and hell knows I haven't any. If none of you mugs knows anything new, and pretty quick too, then we may as well say our last prayers if you still know some.
The bandits were busy cutting saplings, branches, and twigs. They were constructing movable barricades, Indian fashion. Once ready, they would push these barricades before them, using them as shields while steadily moving on. All the attack could do would be to fire against the thickly interwoven branches and foliage. Bullets might not even penetrate, and the man crawling behind could not be aimed at. The possibility of being hit was reduced tenfold. It could be reduced still more by forming two attacking lines, one closing in behind the first.
If they use that trick at night or early before sunrise,
Howard said, watching them eagerly,
then we haven't even a Bolshevik's chance. We'll be killed like rats. My gold mine for a 24 grenades or one Jack Johnson. Oh, hell, I'd exchange it for an old mini or for even a half dozen smoke candles, my swell mine. Well, partners, to tell you the Bible's truth, this is what we may call H-hour for us. If my mother was still alive, I'd ask her forgiveness for having stolen her jam and then lying about it, cross my heart.
It looks to me, said Dobbs, as if all we can do now is to sell our hides for the highest price possible, and at the last minute, when they jump in here, send as many of those sons of bitches to hell as we can.
And don't forget, one last bullet to blow your head off yourself,
Curtin suggested.
I pray to all the gods in heaven that I don't fall into their hands alive. If you can't shoot yourself, try and stab yourself to death. It'll still be sweeter than being peeled by them. Hell forbid they hand you over to those we wounded.
Lacod had become very pale. He tried to grin at the jokes cracked by the other fellows, but he failed in his effort. Howard looked at him and felt pity. He slapped him on his back and said,
well, buddy, if you'd asked me before, I'd have told you in my most straightforward manner that gold is always very expensive, no matter how you get it or where you get it.
Hearing this, Curtin had an idea.
Perhaps if we offer them our goods and the guns, they'll let us off.
No, honey dear, you still misjudge them.
Howard said,
this race has lived for 400 years under conditions which it never paid to trust anyone. It never paid to build a good house. It never paid to take your little money to a savings bank or invest it in some decent enterprise. You can't expect them to treat you in any other way, considering how they've been treated by the church, by the Spanish authorities, and by their own authorities for 400 years. If you offer them your gold and your guns, they'll take them and promise to let you go. But they won't let you go. They'll torture you just the same to find out if there isn't more than you offered them. Then they kill you just the same because you might give them away. They've never known what justice is, so you can't expect them to know it now. Nobody has ever shown them loyalty, so how can they show it to you? None has ever kept any promise to them, so they can't keep any promise they may have made you. They all say an Ave Maria before killing you, and they will cross you and themselves before and after slaying you in the most cruel way. We wouldn't be any different from them if we had to live for 400 years under all kinds of tyrannies, superstitions, despotisms, corruptions, and perverted religions. I'd like to know,
Curtin broke in,
why they didn't come out with that old redskin trick earlier.
They're lazier than an old mule. Dobbs really smiled. Too lazy for that. They tried to catch us without so much work. Only when they saw they couldn't get us any other way did they come to that smart tank attack. I bet they're cursing now that they have to work so hard to catch us. Curtin was looking up the steep rock. Howard saw him.
Yes, Kitty, I've thought of that several times. Kept me from sleeping well last night. I had my eyes on this rock most of the time, thinking and thinking about a solution, a way out, over this rock. But there's no escape over this rock, and none on either side of this furrow here. Not even under the cover of night. With the thickest thunderstorm coming to your aid above you, you can get away from this trench without running straight into their arms.
The bandits were again cooking their meals. The partners looked at them at times as if by merely watching them, they might come upon an idea to help them out of the grave they already felt buried in. Into the silence came suddenly an excited cry.
Compadre, compadre, pronto, muy pronto. Quick, come here. What the hell is up?
One of the guards by the horses, who from his post could overlook and watch the trail leading to the camp, had come up and called the chief. All the men banded together, and the partners could hear the men all talking to each other at the same time. But it was difficult to make out what it was about. Then the men hurriedly picked up all their things that lay about and went off down the trail. Curtin started to jump out of the trench to watch them more closely. McCod pulled him down, saying,
Wait, pal. This may be only a trick to lure us out of here and get us without even using their barricades.
I don't think so,
Howard said.
They would have to be awfully good movie actors to play a trick like that so perfectly. Didn't you notice that guy running up here like wild with his message? There's something else behind this. I wonder what.
Curtin, not heeding Lacod's warning, had left the trench and gone far to the left, where he climbed up to their lookout, whence the whole valley could be seen. There he sat for quite a while looking around, seeming to see something of importance. Then he called out,
Hey, partners, up here, all of you. Here's a sight if there ever was.
The partners, forgetting all about the bandits, climbed up to where Curtin was sitting.
Trust my eyes?
Howard exclaimed.
Do I see right or do I? Hell, that's a pleasure. I should say a real relief.
It was surely a good sight for the partners, a marching squadron of Federal cavalry. There was not the slightest doubt as to what they were after. The villagers must have tipped them off that the bandits had gone up to this plateau to rob the gringo of his shotguns and provisions, for these soldiers were coming up the trail to the camp.
I can't quite get why these bandits left rather than wait for the soldiers up here,
Dobbs wondered. Howard laughed. His laughter was heartier than it was meant to be, for it carried all the anxiety he had felt during the last 2 days, all the anxiety that he now wanted to blow off.
Well, you mustn't think them dumber than they are. They may not have as much brain as you have, Dobbs, sweetie, but they still have something in their cones. Didn't I tell you they're old fighters, fairly well trained in all tricks of warfare? If they should wait here, they'd be lost for good. In the first place, they would have us at their backs and the soldiers blocking their only way of escape. Even if they could overcome us, and I'm sure that was what they discussed so hotly, they couldn't hold out very long in this trench. The soldiers would attack them the minute they arrived, perhaps even using the same shields these rascals had fixed to catch us with. Their only way to safety, or at least for a few days more alive, is to get out of this trail before the soldiers enter. That's the reason why they're in such a devilish hurry. Their pants are wetter now than ours were an hour ago, tell you that.
It was not a great joke, but all were laughing, as they had not laughed for weeks. Dobbs said,
For once in my life, I'm actually grateful that there are still soldiers in the world.
Gee cries, they sure have come in a good time. That's what I say. I could kiss them soldiers whenever they would like it. Your sons of sunshine. Gee, fellers, tell you the naked goddamn truth. I was already chewing earth between my teeth. And that's the damn truth, it sure is.
Do I feel happy, do I?
You bet. Lacod had got his color back, and also his speech. Howard laughed again.
Yeah, these bandits, I think, have done us still another favor by leaving in such a hurry. Had they stopped here and waited for the soldiers? Well, boys, I wouldn't have liked it too much to have soldiers sneaking about here. Soldiers are all to the good sometimes, but sometimes they can be a real nuisance to a decent feller. They might, if only for fun, start to grill us about what we're doing up here, and they might nose around. I wouldn't have liked it so very much, would you, partners?
It's better this way, I figure, Dobbs said.
Let's take in the second act of the picture.
Curtin was again watching the valley eagerly. The soldiers had taken up the trail. There could no longer be the slightest doubt. When still half a mile away from where the trail entered the base of the mountains, they divided up in three sections and formed a very wide circle. They did not know precisely where the trail left the valley. This was to the advantage of the bandits, for when the bandits finally reached the valley, the soldiers were not close, so the bandits, riding in the brush along the base of the mountains, won a good headway against the soldiers. For 2 hours, the partners could only occasionally see a soldier, because the squadron had come close to the base, but then shots were heard roaring over the valley. The soldiers had caught sight of the bandits, and those who had come upon the fresh tracks had fired signal shots
to get the whole troop on the right trail. Now, a lively race started in the valley. The soldiers were chasing the bandits, who disbanded, each trying to escape in his own way. Such were their usual tactics, a procedure which made it very difficult for the soldiers to round up all the bandits within a short time. A few always escaped. These men joined others, also escaped, and formed a new band, no less ferocious than the original one. The task for the soldiers and the police was seldom an easy one. Many of them lost their lives in these battles, and still more returned to their barracks wounded, or crippled for the rest of their days. For the partners, watching the fight of civilization against barbarism, it became more and more difficult to follow the events in the valley. The bandits were seen riding in all directions, with the soldiers after them. They went farther and farther out of sight down the valley. Shots became fainter and fainter. "I would suggest," Dobbs said, "that we now, for the first time in 2 days, sit down to a quiet and decent dinner and have a friendly talk about the news of the day."
"Not so bad, that idea. Let's do it right away."
Howard laughed.
"If I should be asked,"
Curtin shouted mirthfully,
"I'd say it's okay by me. What say, Lakey Shaky?"
Lacod made a hardly visible effort to smile, which he hoped Curtin would understand and take for a perfect answer.